You can actually test whether I'm enlightened or not. So I get angry at you for killing me. Okay, it is now 8 o'clock, time for today's Dhamma talk. You don't have to record everything, because I think they are recorded over the back there, and I'm sure that these will be made available to everyone afterwards. And if we record it and give it out, then I can edit out all of the bad things I say. It'd get me in trouble afterwards. But for today's talk, I'm going to continue on the path of meditation. What happens, you know, when the mind starts to get quite deep? And I have to talk about this because some of you have already got some deep meditation. And if you haven't yet, you will soon. It's just what happens. And even though you may not have experienced these things yet, you certainly will in the future, and it's nice to be prepared. So you know what's happening with meditation, and it also means you're not scared, and it also means that you won't interrupt the process, and you have some wonderful experiences, and from those experiences you get wonderful deep insights, and you understand how Buddhism works. But first of all, in these deep states of meditation, so many people get afraid because they can't feel their body. And they think, if I can't feel my body, something wrong is going to happen, I'm going to die. Or they can't hear any sound and they think, wow, someone can sneak up on me and take this or kill me. This is dangerous. But I have a couple of stories I like to say about what happens when you get into deep meditation and how absolutely safe you are. And the first of these stories comes from the sutras, where there was one monk in the time of the Buddha, and he was meditating in the forest, and he was a great meditator. He became so deep in his meditation, he became so still, that when some villagers walked past him looking for herbs or mushrooms or something in the forest, they saw this venerable sitting perfectly still, and they couldn't even see him breathing. And they thought, oh my goodness, the venerable monk has died. What should we do? We can't leave him in the forest because he'll be eaten by the jungle animals. And that's not respectful. Is that how you would like to be treated when you die? Actually, it's really, really good. It's called recycling. Because burying you in the ground, that takes up too much good soil, and burning you puts all these CO2 gases in the air, which destroys our environment. So cremating is no good, burying is no good. So feeding to the animals, that's a wonderful way to die. Would you like to do that? You sure? You won't feel a thing. But anyway, they decided it's not respectful to have the venerable eaten by jungle animals. And they were in the forest, there was plenty of wood around, so it didn't take them that long to collect a big pile of wood and respectfully lift the venerable and put him on top, and they lit the fire. They were going to cremate the venerable monk. And they didn't realize he wasn't dead, he was just meditating. And when the fire was started to get very strong, they left the venerable because the fire would take care of the rest of the ceremony. And they had their work to do, so they went off into the forest collecting this, leaving the venerable one to burn on top of the big mound of wood. This is in the sutras. And you can imagine the villagers' surprise and admiration when that same monk arrived in the village the next morning on arms round. Not even his robe was burned, let alone his body. Because when you get into those deep meditations, you are invulnerable. Even fire cannot burn you. So if you do go into a deep meditation, and by mistake your relations think you're dead, and they take you to the crematorium in Hong Kong or in Jakarta, and they put you in the ovens, and they do all the chanting, and then when the fellow, the guy, he opens up the drawer in the oven, he says, "Hi, me again." You won't burn, you won't feel anything, because you're in the deep meditation. You are perfectly safe. And the other story, which I tell, can only really tell you who it is now, because it's an Indonesian monk I knew. I can say who his name is now, because when he was alive, I didn't really want to say. Because if monks do have special powers, we do keep it secret. But once they're dead, we can tell everybody. And that was that monk, it was Sudarmo. An old Indonesian monk, a long time ago. Because I knew him when I was a young monk. I was, I think, about 5 years senior to him. And he told me his story about what happened to him. Because he said he always wanted, he's still a lay person, you know, a five preceptor, but he always wanted to try and be like a hermit and try and be like a Muni. So he went off into the jungles in Java, central Java somewhere, when there were still plenty of jungles there. Very hard to find jungle these days in Java. But he went there in the deep jungle, and he found a nice place to meditate, And he described to me what happened. And again, I could only say this, now he's dead, because he shared it with me. He said he was meditating there, he got into a very deep state of peace, and he saw this light coming towards him. I'll talk about this later. This is Nimitta, this beautiful, incredibly brilliant light. And because, you know, his English wasn't perfect, it was interesting how he described it. He said he married that light. He united right within it. And he was blissed out for a long time. And when he came out of his meditation, it was actually several days later. Not half an hour, but days. And he noticed the jungle around him, the forest, had changed. There was a lot of damage to the jungle. And he couldn't understand what had happened. And so, when he got out of meditation, he walked to the village, he asked, what had happened? And there had been a flood. And where he had been sitting, he was under a couple of meters of water for days. And he didn't know a thing. He was perfectly safe in his meditation, even though he was deep underwater. Because when you get into those states of meditation, you are invulnerable. You are like Superman or Iron Woman. And the other thing about him I now can share, there was one of my disciples, and she was in Bangkok. She was actually a princess. But she never really sort of bothered with that sort of status. She was a very easily approachable woman. But she was a granddaughter of one of the kings. And anyway, she went to one of the monasteries in Thailand. It's really nice when you have real psychic powers, you know, the real juicy ones. This is one of those. And she used to go to a meditation class in one of the temples in Bangkok, Wat Bawon, which was taught by this monk. And she told me, and I've got no doubt that what she said was absolutely true, because I've known her for a long time, and she would never, ever lie to a monk, and she would not exaggerate. She was really down to earth. She said she was meditating in the room like, you know, you do here, and then she felt something was strange. Something was odd. So instead of keeping her eyes closed, she peeked. She opened her eyes, and she swears that what she saw was true. There were rays of light coming out from this monk, going into the body of one of these meditators there. Just like you see in the movies, but this was real. The monk with the rays of light going into somebody else. That was cool. So he was really a great monk, this one. But, you know, he passed away now, so I can tell all those stories. If you told him now, so you told him while he was still alive, what would you go and do? You go and see him. Say, can we see your laser eyes, please? You don't want photographs of it. That's why we don't tell when we're still alive. Otherwise, we become members of like a circus, and just people just want to see your laser eyes or whatever else it is. So, but he could actually do that. But that's a sign that just he had very, very strong meditation. And he became totally invulnerable. Now, the reason I tell those stories to you is so you won't be afraid. I don't know why this is. I can't understand it. But I know when you do go into deep meditation, you become invulnerable to everything. And also, in the deeper meditation, your health improves enormously. Again, I'm not sure what the medical reasons are. Well, I do know, but if you have aches and pains in before you meditate, if you meditate a long time, you get into deep meditation, it's natural, you find you don't have any aches and pains at all. They're just all gone. How that happens, I don't know. But I will tell the last little strange story, because people like weird stories. And this, I can't say the name of this monk, because actually I don't know it. Ajahn Sujato told me this story, and I said, please don't tell the name of this monk, because he will get too famous. He was teaching a meditation retreat in Sydney a few years ago. And just like the retreats we have here, And they started off with half an hour meditation on a Friday evening. It was a 9-day retreat. And it was supposed to be the first talk at 8 p.m. And everybody was sitting there waiting for the bell to ring after the half an hour introductory meditation, and then the talk. But the monk never rang the bell. He just sat there. 8:30, hadn't come out of his meditation yet. 9 o'clock, still hadn't come out. They missed the talk. A couple of people left. 9:30, he was still meditating. Half the rest left. 10 o'clock, still meditating. They all went to bed. They just left him there, meditating. When they got up in the morning, he hadn't moved. He was still meditating. Breakfast time, never went to breakfast, no chanting, was still meditating. They came after breakfast for the morning talk, he was still meditating. Lunch, he was still meditating. He sat absolutely still for 8 days. Never moved at all. Never went to the toilet. Never had a glass of water. Sitting there, perfectly still. And when he finally came out of his meditation, the first thing he did was to apologize. I'm so sorry that I didn't give you any instructions or no talks, because I went into a deep meditation. I just enjoyed myself. I couldn't come out. I'm so sorry. And all the people there apparently said, no, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's so inspiring to see that such things are possible in today's world, that it can be done. So inspiring, thank you. And what do you think happened when that monk came out of meditation? Did he have to go to hospital because he hadn't eaten, hadn't gone to the toilet for 8 days? If you haven't gone to the toilet for 8 days, you're in big trouble. But in deep meditation, no trouble at all, you're fine. So this is the thing I'm saying here, is that in deeper meditation, the safer and healthier you are, so you don't have to worry. That's the reason I say this, to try and get you off this worry business, because sometimes people getting into some nice meditation, they get so afraid, they spoil it all. And even I remember just simple things. This man from Singapore, he was meditating and he got so scared because he couldn't feel his hands. So that's a small thing. It doesn't matter, you don't feel your hands. They'll come back again afterwards. So forget about it. But because he wasn't used to that, he got a bit afraid. So what will happen to you? There will be some strange experiences happening in meditation. Don't be afraid. Remember what I've told you. And just let it happen. You have a wonderful, wonderful time. And also, if you do get afraid, you're in good company. Because in one of the suttas, the Mahasatika Sutta, where the Buddha described his path towards enlightenment, he said he was afraid when he started meditating, because it was just really strange. And he said, why am I afraid of all of this? I won't be afraid. And that's how he became enlightened. So if you have fear, remember the Buddha before he became enlightened also faced that fear. It's the fear of letting go, of losing things, of letting go of attachments. That's what it is. But it's so pleasurable and it's so profound, you can hardly resist it. So what is happening there? You're getting peaceful in your meditation. Your mindfulness is getting strong. You're not being concerned with too many thoughts. The mind is nice and quiet. And your mindfulness is there. You're reasonably happy. So what happens next is naturally, if you're not watching the breath already, usually the breath comes to you. And for a long time, I never realized why this happens. Why did the Buddha always say to watch your breathing and nothing else? And some of the experiences which showed me what was happening began when I went to a Zen monastery to do a retreat when I was about 21, 22. Because I mentioned to you, I was a Buddhist when I was in UK since the time I was about 16. But it took me a while to find other Buddhists, and whatever Buddhist monasteries or temples there weren't that many. I didn't have much of a choice. So any type of meditation I try out. So once I went to a Zen retreat for the weekend. And that's very different from Ajahn Brahm's retreats. That's really strict. And the master would come in the morning with the Zen stick. And if your head moved a slight bit, whack! That was so scary. Now, I've always been a monk who's been blessed with good karma. I never got hit with the stick. You know why? It wasn't because I wasn't sleepy. I was sleepy, but the man next to me was more sleepy than I was. That was my good karma. So he got hit first. Whack! It's amazing. I didn't feel a thing, but I could hear what he... And after that, all my sleepiness was absolutely gone. I was dead straight. I was terrified. It sounded awful. So only one person has to get hit and everyone else wakes up. But it was a different type of meditation we had to do. We were all just in a corridor with two long benches on either side where we would sit. And we were supposed to face the wall with our eyes open. Now, I've never done that before. When I meditated, it was always sitting down, closing your eyes. But now I had to keep them open and watch the wall, and I didn't know what was going on. So you try anything. And I was very adventurous, but I'd also done enough meditation before to be able to calm my mind. So I wasn't thinking about anything. I was just watching the wall with a silent mind. And then something weird happened. The wall vanished. There was no wall there anymore. My eyes were open and there was no wall. Now I thought, wow, this is really good. Anything weird, strange, I was really into. As well as joining the Buddhist society in Cambridge, one of the other societies I joined was the Psychic Research Society. So I'd go hunting ghosts. I didn't run away from them. I actually wanted to find them. So we'd go to all these haunted houses in UK and try and find a ghost. You guys, you wouldn't even go near those haunted houses. But I was adventurous. You know, I went looking for the ghosts instead of running away from them. And so I was always interested in strange stuff. So when it disappeared, I thought, wow, this is really good. But of course, afterwards, when you have experiences like that, you try, why? Is some insight going to come from this? And because you had a science background, it's pretty easy to figure out what was happening. That your brain is only wired, it's only made to notice things which change. For example, the sound of the aircon. Now you can hear it. But after a few seconds, because it doesn't change, it's just a hum in the background. After a few seconds or minutes, you won't be able to hear it again because it's not changing. Feelings in the body. The feeling in your bottom against the cushion or against the chair. You can feel it now. But I guarantee in a few seconds, if it doesn't change, doesn't get worse, doesn't get better, you find you can't feel it anymore. Because your brain only notices what changes. And the same when you look at a wall and it doesn't change. After a while, sight turns off. It's exactly similar to computers. If you don't click the mouse or do anything, the computer screen turns off. And that's exactly what happens with sight. If the wall is not moving, sight turns off. not the wall vanished, it's my sense of sight turned off. And that's also what happens when you close your eyes. If you close your eyes right now, you can see the inside of your eyelids. But because nothing happens there, after a few seconds, sight just turns off. You're not seeing darkness anymore, you're not seeing anything. You're just not seeing. The sense of sight is being turned off. And that gives you an indication of what we're doing with this meditation. You're closing your eyes. Soon the sense of sight turns off. You're sitting comfortably, and after a while you can't feel your body anymore. You can't feel your bottom, you can't feel your legs or your back or your hands. There's no, as long as people don't pass wind, there's no change of smell, which is one of the reasons I always ask people, if you do have trouble with your digestion and you're always passing wind, no farting, please sit at the back so it doesn't affect so many people. And now you know why the people in the back sit there. But as long as the smell doesn't change, after a while you can't smell anything anymore. The taste of saliva, that soon goes. So you're, because nothing moves, your five senses turn off. You can't see, you can't hear, you can't smell, you can't taste. But there is something which hasn't stopped moving yet. You're breathing. That's why it naturally happens. When you calm down, when you close your eyes, sitting in a place where there's not much change of noise, you'll find your senses all turn off. Your legs disappear, your arms disappear, your head disappears. The only thing left is your breathing. Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. So this is where we just get to the breath meditation. Now, once you get to that breath meditation, everything else has vanished. It's not that hard to calm the breath down. The reason is, you are not doing very much. Not even thinking. Remember, thinking takes a lot of energy. The more you think, the more oxygen needs to go to your brain to do the work, which means the more you have to breathe. When you're very calm, you're not thinking or worrying about anything, and you're sitting perfectly still, your body doesn't need much oxygen. When your car is parked in the garage, it doesn't need much petrol. So this is what's happening. So your breathing gets less and less because you don't need so much oxygen. And it gets so little, your breath is almost hardly there at all. Just breathing in and breathing out, so soft. When it gets soft, you will begin to notice that there's hardly any difference between your in-breath and your out-breath. It's just breath, that's all. Whether the wind blows from the east or it blows from the west, it feels the same. And because now the breath is pretty even and very soft, breathing in, out, because nothing much is changing, it turns off. You can't feel your breath anymore. It's disappeared. It's vanished. The last of your five senses has turned off. And what happens next? Now there's only one of your six senses left, the mind. So now you go into the realm of the mind, of the sixth sense. And usually what happens, you see a light, the nimitta. However, if you don't see that light yet, a lot of the time is because the five senses turned off a bit too soon. Before you develop enough mindfulness, the mindfulness is still weak, so you can't see the more subtle images in the world of the mind. Which is one of the reasons I encourage people to develop lots and lots of stillness, until lots of joy comes up, until you can go outside and you see one blade of grass so beautifully green. Until the food tastes, wow, that's delicious. Until you hear the sound, and even the sound of the workers is just like a Beethoven symphony. That's what happens when you get strong mindfulness. Everything you see becomes beautiful and delightful. And especially the breathing. So if you haven't got enough mindfulness, it hasn't built up its strength, so you don't see the delightful breath. It makes it much harder when the breath vanishes to see this nimitta. But if you develop this beautiful, happy mind, and you're watching the breath, breathing in, oh, this is so nice. Wow. Oh, I can do this all day, breathing out. Whoa. I mean, it's really pleasant. You're very happy. The happiness is not something to be afraid of. It's not going to make you attached. It's a sign, a symptom that your mindfulness is strong. You've got energy in your mind. And now, when the breath vanishes, you don't see just darkness. These beautiful lights come up into your mind. That's called the nimitta. Now, sometimes people say, I've never ever seen a light in my mind. Maybe my meditation is not good enough. But I guarantee 100% that each one of you will see that light sooner or later. You know what I'm going to say. If not when you're alive, when you do die. You've heard all these people tell the experiences of what it's like to die. What happens? Your five senses turn off. You can't see, hear, smell, taste, and touch anymore. That's called death. The brain stops working. And people say they float out of their body. And what do they do next? They go towards the light. That is exactly the same light you see in this part of meditation. What it is just the way that the human being perceives their mind. It's just what it looks like. This is how you look at it. It's like a beautiful light in the mind, light right in front of you. So that's all that really is. And you understand that because you do that in meditation. It's a beautiful light which you see. That is your mind. And for those of you who are Pali experts, who have studied the suttas, you will have heard the Buddha said that this citta is a pabhasara. It's the luminous mind. And sometimes people have all these ideas of what that really means. He said the mind is luminous when the five hindrances aren't around. Now you've got this beautiful light, and it's luminous. That is the pabhasara citta. You're experiencing it, it's right in front of you. You can't miss it. The radiant mind, when the hindrances and the five senses have vanished. Number one, before we even go any further, insight meditation. What is insight anyway? Is understanding a different way of looking at life and death. Now you've got experience. You've got data. There, your five senses have gone. The beautiful nimitta is right in front of you. You get the insight on what it's like to die. No problem. It's really peaceful. It's very pleasant. So I say to many people, dying is the problem, so get it out of the way quick and get to the juicy part, actually being dead. Being dead is fun. And we're Buddhists. I always say that Buddhists are the experts on death, not the Christians, because the Christians only die once. We die many, many, many times. So we have experience. So we're the experts. So we know what happens. It's not a big deal. So there you go. You're meditating. You've got this light. Now what happens if you don't get this light coming up? All it is, you haven't got enough mindfulness yet. Mindfulness is not strong enough. So it doesn't matter. You can stay in that peaceful state, but don't want anything. Practice more stillness. Don't do so much. Don't think so much. Don't talk so much. Be more still. The more still you are, the more you encourage mindfulness. The more power you give it. From stillness, you empower the mindfulness. Remember, if you do stuff, you're wasting your mental energy. Losing it, wasting it in the wrong areas. You're absolutely still. Don't do anything. Don't make any choices. Don't control the mind. And the energy builds up in mindfulness. And you get really happy, very strong. And then you can see delightful breath. When the breath vanishes, wow. Delightful jitter. Beautiful lights. Now, when these lights do come up, sometimes they come up and the five senses haven't totally vanished yet. Especially sound. Sometimes you see a light, you can still hear some sounds outside. But all that really means is the sixth sense, the mind, it's already now getting pretty strong. So it's so strong, it's more powerful than the sound. So even the sound hasn't stopped yet. The amplitude of the mind sense is so strong it can dominate. So the five senses are usually so strong you can hardly experience the mind. But when you subdue the five senses, keep them still, and they get less and less in amplitude, less strong, they get weaker and weaker, softer and softer, and your mind gets stronger and stronger. There comes a time the mind sense is stronger than all the other senses. And that's actually when you start to see the nimitta, even though you can still hear sounds. And the weird thing happens when you really get into this meditation, and you meditate a lot, and it's really deep. Sometimes you get nimittas lasting almost all day. And sometimes even when you've got your eyes open, when you're eating your lunch, there's a nimitta right in front of you. You've got to eat your meal through the nimitta. And it's just there, because that is showing how strong your sixth sense is in that situation. So strong. It's even more strong than the five senses. So that's why that sometimes these nimittas, these lights, they can come up and you can still hear sounds and stuff, but they're in the background somewhere. So what to do? Just keep just focusing on this nimitta. The two biggest problems are fear, because this is strong stuff. You're really getting deep. You're getting some profound insights coming up. And sometimes people think, no, I'm not ready for this. I don't want to become a monk or a nun yet. So you get a bit afraid sometimes, but don't be afraid. It's worth it. And the other one is excitement. You get a nimitta, yeah, I can tell all my friends I've got a nimitta, yeah. And of course, as soon as you get excited, it vanishes immediately. Because you're not being still. The simile which helped me more than any other was from my master Ajahn Chah. And that was the simile of the still forest pool. Now I know that became the title of one of his books written by one of his not so advanced disciples, but the real simile was much different as I heard it. Because Ajahn Chah would explain some of the times he was wandering in the jungles and the forests of Thailand, and that it was the tradition to find a place in the afternoon where there was some water. Because, you know, even for an Asian, just walking through the forests and jungles all day, you get really sweaty and dirty, and if you didn't wash yourself, you felt terrible afterwards. Now, when I was doing the wandering in the jungle practice, I think it was about 2 or 3 days I lasted without bathing. And you felt disgusting, just really itchy and really yucky all over because there was no water. Until I found a place and had a shower, I felt much better. So you have to really bathe, even whoever you are. And after bathing, you know, sometimes you'd rinse out a robe which was dirty, and then you'd use a filter to filter some water for drinking. And after you'd done all of that, then you'd usually set up your mosquito net about between 10 and 20 meters from the water's edge. You never set it up next to the water, because what would happen later on was all the jungle animals would come out to drink and play. And Ajahn Chah would say that some evenings he wouldn't meditate, not till late. Just for entertainment, he would keep his eyes open and watch the jungle animals come out to play. In the days before National Geographic and Nature Channel, that's the only time you could see these animals act naturally. And it was surprising what you would see. When I was in the jungles in the far north of Thailand, not far from the Burmese border, in the dry season, this was a very remote place up in the mountains, I put just a little dish of water out for the birds to drink. And of course, they found that water very quickly. But what happened next was really something I wish I would have had a camera to photograph it. Because I was in a hut, wooden hut, and the dish of water was outside, and I would watch them through a knot hole, a little hole in the wood, so they wouldn't notice I was watching. And all these birds would come, and after a couple of days, there's so many birds of different species, big and small, and they would form a queue, a line, one after the other, and the one in front would jump in and wash and drink. And when that one went, the next one would come in. I'd never seen, even Thai lay people don't queue, but the birds did. And it was so cute to see this. Big birds, small birds, the one who got there first was in the front of the queue and got to the water first. But, just like in the human race, one bird would come and try and jump the queue. And as soon as it jumped the queue, all the other birds in line, all the different species, would actually jump on that bird, peck him, and drive him away. And once the queue jumper had been chased off, then they'd all go back in line again, exactly as they were before. Now that's honestly, that was true. It happened every evening, and I just loved watching that. It was the sort of thing you would never expect, but which actually happened. And actually, one of the other strange things, a strange story taught this morning. When I was in that hut, it's by myself in this monastery, you know, you couldn't see any village or anything, it was really remote. And sometimes you know that something is happening, something strange is happening, just like that lady knew there was something happening with that monk with the laser eyes. I realized there was something weird happening. So I came out of meditation, I went outside, and again, it would have been wonderful if I'd have taken a photograph. This would be in a front cover of Time magazine or something. Because I saw that every bird in the forest was up in the sky. The sky was covered with birds. And right in the middle, there's these two gigantic birds. I've never seen any bird that big before. And I remember going to Norway once and seeing a king's eagle. Which, you know, as it was just squatting down with his wings folded, was as tall as I was. And as soon as I saw this in the wild, I turned around because that could do a lot of damage to a human being. Huge birds. And these were bigger. There's a pair of them just flying through the sky. You know what I reckon they were? Garudas? Honestly. I've never seen anything like that in my whole life. Weird and strange, mystical. And like the king and queen of the jungles there, just having a tour, and all the other birds had to go up into the sky to greet them. Don't exaggerate, those weird experiences. You have those weird experiences when you go into the jungles away from all human beings and you're meditating, and strange. But anyway, this is what you actually see. Now, going back to Nimittas, I know you're more interested in these weird experiences. Going back to these Nimittas, that when Ajahn Chah was in that jungle, he would sit there with his eyes open, but he would have to be perfectly still. He tells us this. He said, when I was perfectly still, then the jungle animals would come out of the forest to drink. And they'd bring their young with them. And he'd watch them play, and it was really good fun to watch these little animals play around. But if he moved, the animals would know that someone was watching. There was a human being there. And if they knew there was a human being, they'd be so scared, even though they were thirsty, they'd run away and hide. Because usually in the jungle, the only human beings these animals would meet would be the hunters, who would kill them. So if they sensed any human being, they would hide. So Ajahn Chah said he had to be really still for these animals to come out. And he was. And he'd enjoy them, watching them play, and they wouldn't realize that someone was watching, and he just let them play. And it was so wonderful. But then he said, sometimes he was really still. And then some strange, beautiful animals would come out, which he'd never ever seen before, which even his parents and friends had never described existed before. Weird and strange and beautiful animals. And they'd only come out from the jungle when he was perfectly still. Even a little whisper, wow, they would pick it up and run away. And when they came out and he watched them play, that was the most wonderful experience ever. And this was the symbol of nimittas and jhanas. When a nimitta comes out to play by your still mind, you have to be like an Ajahn Chah. Don't move. Don't try and take notes. Otherwise, they will know someone is watching. And they'll run away and won't come out again. And that's even more important when the big jhanas come. Weird and beautiful states of mind, which you never imagine something that incredible could exist. They'll only come out to play by your mind when you're really still. You can't move. Because if they realize that you're watching, they're gone. That really helped me. Because you realize how still you have to be for these things to happen. And that when they do happen, people think, what should I do? Should I do this? That is not being still. That's why they all disappear again. It doesn't matter how much I say this, it's going to happen to you as it happens to everyone. When a nimitta first comes, it just goes away straight away. Nimitta! You can't help it. Okay, so yeah, you've been there, done that. So next time it comes, just be still. Nimitta comes. Don't move. Now, with these nimittas, there is what we call all different types of nimittas. You've got like the what sometimes I like calling the sheet nimittas, which are really common for many of you. So, yeah, your breathing has almost disappeared. You can't sort of feel it. You can hear some sounds, but not very much. And it's like your whole light, your whole mind is bright, like a sheet of light. Now, that shows your mind is becoming strong, but it doesn't really count as a real useful nimitta yet because it's too diverse. So what should you do? Nothing. Just let it develop naturally, because what happens naturally, in that sheet of light, there will always be one part which is more brilliant, more bright, more beautiful than the rest. And naturally, your mind will go to that more bright and beautiful part. And when it goes to that bright and beautiful part, that would expand. And it would get even more bright. And you go to the more beautiful part of that part. And little by little, this is how the nimitta develops. Until you're left with this beautiful little disc of light. If your mind is even more complicated than that, sometimes people see whole visions. And I remember one time, because maybe that I was born in the West, I saw this beautiful meadows and trees and little rivers running through the valleys. A delightful rustic countryside scene. Too complicated to be very useful. But my mind almost automatically knew what to do. In any of those big scenes, there's always one part which is either more beautiful than the other, or for me, the part which twinkled, which glittered. And that was on one of the trees in my vision. There was a dewdrop which twinkled, sparkled. And straight away my mind went to that beautiful sparkle, and then it opened up into a beautiful nimitta. That's how these things happen. So you don't do anything. Wait for the nimitta to evolve and then get its beautiful lights. Now, sometimes it's very common when people get to this stage of light, they see a light, but it's not in the center. It's over the edge, over here somewhere, over here. And what do most people do? They go looking for it and it goes away. So it is as if this nimitta is checking you out. Are you ready for me yet? It's just peeking at you. And if you do anything, it's not going to come in. So you just sit there. You can stay there if you wish. Perfectly still, like an Ajahn Chah, the still forest pool. While the animals are putting their head out of the bush to see if anyone's there. And if they look around and see there's no one there, then they'll come right into the center. Now, those nimittas, yes, at first difficult to maintain them for long periods of time. They tend to come and go. Why? Because you're not still enough to allow them to stay for long periods of time. It's a very sensitive stage of the meditation. And all this stillness, the lack of doing things, which I've been encouraging you all this time, this is where it's really important. At other stages of the meditation, you can do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It's not the best, but it doesn't disturb things. Here you're so sensitive, even the slightest bit of doing something will disturb it. So it's like a test for you to see how still you can be. If you move, nimitta moves. You get feedback immediately. You've moved. So calm down. And little by little, having a nimitta there trains you how to be really still. And once you get trained, the nimitta stays there. And of course, it's very, very peaceful and very, very delightful, because you are still. Whatever you see is beautiful. It's just like you see a rock in the garden. That's beautiful. You see a blade of grass, it's more beautiful. You see a flower, that's incredible. Imagine what it's like to see a limiter. Wow. That's just some of the biggest happiness you've ever seen in your life. Really, really, really happy. Powerfully so. Don't be afraid of the power. It's just your mind starting to really get strong. And it gets so strong and so brilliant and so happy. There's two little things which happen to some people. And even just in a recent retreat here, one person mentioned one of these. And when she mentioned them, I sort of smiled and laughed, because I remember when that happened to me. Just the limiter gets so bright. It's like brighter than 100 suns. And you think, I'm going to go blind. That's what happened to me, and I opened my eyes. That is stupid. Stupid, Ajahn Brahm. Because you're not seeing this with your eyes. You're seeing it in the mind. It can be as bright as it wants. You won't go blind at all. Because it's not with your eyes. The sense of sight is turned off. It's a mental image. So it can be as bright as it wants. And the other one was the more enjoyable one. When the limiter got so bright and so beautiful. I was so much happiness. And I thought, no human being can take so much pleasure. And I thought, I'm going to explode. You can't take so much happiness. And I got this wonderful insight. Yes, you can. You can take even more happiness. Now you're getting into big stuff now, okay? Real deep happiness. And this is where I come to one of my marketing slogans to get people into this. And it's a very powerful marketing slogan. Because when you get to this stage of nimittas, already it's a bliss, a pleasure, much better than sex. Are you interested? It's human beings, you know. For many people, the highest pleasure they have is sexual orgasm. I'm being honest, okay? And this, I have to be honest, I don't mind being open. Sometimes people criticize me for this. I wasn't born as a monk. I was born in 1951. I was sexually active in the late 60s and 70s. My first meditation retreat was in 1971, I think. No, 70. 70, 71. Had a girlfriend. And I remember, please excuse me, I remember sleeping with her. 6 days later, going to a meditation retreat, a couple of days later, getting this incredible experience with a nimitta, and it was better than sex with your girlfriend. When that happened, I thought, wow. And what I thought at the time was, how come no one's told me about this before? Why have I been messing around with girlfriends? They're really expensive and very difficult sometimes. It's no criticism of you girls, but it's really sometimes for guys, it's just, what is she want? What am I supposed to do? Same with guys as well. But there was even better, lasting longer, and without any problems with, pregnancies and babies and stuff. Ooh. There you go, great pleasure. Now that was amazing. I say that to give you some idea what it feels like. Now you're really rolling along. And it doesn't stop here. Now insight, what does insight come from? It's just pleasure, you get addicted to it. Of course, after you say, why is this so pleasurable? What is the cause of this huge happiness? And it is because a whole heap of suffering has disappeared. That's why. Your five senses in your body are gone. And it feels so free and so beautiful. Now you can understand why the Buddha said, this body is dukkha. And why five senses are suffering. Because they're gone. When they're gone, you really are out of jail. Freedom! Woohoo! Yeah! I'm not being bothered by these things anymore. Huge happiness, huge insights. we've only just started. Because there's much more to come. This is just the beginning. Because soon that Nimitta becomes so bright and so still. Just like Venerable Sudama said, unite with the Nimitta. Go right inside, like you're married to it. No difference between you and that Nimitta. You're inside. Now, that really blisses you out. Well, you can't feel the body, and this time no sound at all can affect you. Deep inside, you are now in the jhanas. And there's no reason why you can't get those. About a year ago, a guy came on one of my retreats. He was covered with tattoos. No, Australian guy, big guy. And you may know that about, 6 kilometers up the road is a prison farm. And when he came in here, I said, you've got the wrong place. You know, your friends are on the way. I thought, you know, he was belonged more in the prison with his friends than a monastery here. And he said, no, I'm on the retreat. And so, okay, fair enough. I judged him. That was wrong, Ajahn Brahm, but I did that. And when it came to the interviews, and he started describing his meditation, that was the one who got jhana that retreat. And I couldn't believe it. And I know what I'm talking about, and I don't make it easier for you to describe it. You know, you have to tell all the bits and pieces, and if you don't sort of meet all those requirements, I'm not going to confirm it for you. But this guy, yeah, you've actually got a jhana. And that really blew me away. That was amazing. The last person I ever expected in the whole retreat was the one who got the jhanas. So, who's it going to be on this retreat? I can't tell. Sometimes it just happens. And sometimes people just fluke it. Because what we need to do, and the first few lay people who started getting these jhanas when I started teaching them, and I have to tell you this story because it's important. The first couple, I asked them, what did you do special this time which you haven't done before? No, why you got this jhana? You know what they said? The first guy, I asked this question, said, I really let go. I really let go. That's what he said. And the next person who got the jhana, I asked them, what did you do this time which was special? And they said exactly the same. I really let go. I let go totally, fully, 100%. Now that gives you the insight into what you need to do to get into the big jhanas. Not letting go 90% or 99%. You've got to totally let go. Really. And when you do it, this is what happens. And who knows who it's going to be. I'll finish off with the last little story. And this was a very cute story. Ajahn Chah, my master. Many of you have read his books. They've been translated into Bahasa and maybe also into Cantonese. And you read his books and they're really inspiring. And you might say, oh, Ajahn Brahm, you're so lucky to have lived with such a great teacher who gave such deep Dhamma talks. The reality was very different. He would sometimes give a talk for 3 hours. Rubbish. But I'm saying that because that's my teacher, my master. I've got to be honest. I respect him. But then he would say just one thing in that 3 hours, which was so inspiring and so wonderful. The 3 hours of rubbish was worth it. It was like digging for gold. You're digging for gold, you've got so much soil and rock and other stuff, but then you find a little nugget of gold. And that's worth all the digging. That's what living with Ajahn Chah was like. A lot of endurance, but it was worth waiting for because when you did strike gold, that was priceless. So it was one of these evenings, Ajahn Chah was giving a talk. hour after hour after hour. Everyone was getting bored. It was late at night, and as in many of these monasteries, have these little fellows, these little novice monks, maybe 11 or 12 years of age. And there's one of these little novices there who was getting really fed up. He said, it's all right for, you know, the big men to stay up all night, but I'm a young fellow. I need to go to bed. I need my sleep. And he was getting more and more upset. And he said, he started thinking, now when is he going to stop? When is he going to stop? 8 o'clock, when is he going to stop? 8:30, when is he going to stop? 8:45, when is he going to stop? And it started repeating itself. When is he going to stop? When is he going to stop? When is he going to stop? And then there was a moment of insight in this little novice. A lot of insight is seeing things from the other way around. And so his insight, instead of saying, when is Ajahn Chah going to stop? He thought, when am I going to stop? And he stopped. When he opened his eyes, it was early in the morning. The monks had left a long time ago. They'd done their chanting, rang their bells, bowed, packed up all their things, and gone to bed. He'd been meditating there all night, blissed out of his little 11-year-old head. First time he got into a deep meditation, into a jhana. And how did he do that? He stopped. Which is a great time for me to stop. Sadhu! 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 Very good. Okay, have a nice morning and stop. And really let go. See what happens. If that doesn't work, go and get some tattoos.